So to me, this was an important project for so many reasons. One was, again, just being able to see the inspiration in my own family, in my kids, and being able to apply that. This was a personal project without it actually being a personal project, right? Like, it had a lot of meaning to me, and it was really, really fun to put this project together, put it out in the world. Another reason that it was big for us is that after releasing this project, we got, a good amount of attention. Like, this was a turning point in the business as a whole. It did exactly what I hoped it would do.
Welcome to the Style Frame Saturdays podcast, the podcast dedicated to ideation, visual storytelling, and concept development as it pertains to an animated production. We'll be breaking down the brief of our guests' favorite style frames, and we'll also get a glimpse into the inspiration and workflows behind their frame of choice as well. That was Matt Bojack, founder of and creative director at Made by Things. He and his team have worked with hundreds of the most recognizable brands over the years. And today he's sharing a frame from one of those branded projects that is still very near and dear to his heart. So let's check it out. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for taking some time to join me on the show today. How are you? How's everything going?
Hey, you bet. Yeah, things are great. No, we were just talking a little bit ago, putting out some fires. as a usual day of kind of running a motion design business, it's things being thrown at you all the time, and sometimes it's 5 minutes before a podcast starts.
Hey, you know, we make it work, right?
We do.
We'll be the firefighters afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here today. I know, before we hopped on, we were talking about how we've kind of, connected at one point or another in the past, kind of have followed each other's work and stuff like that. So I'm familiar with you, obviously. We have you on the show today, and our audience may very well be familiar with you and your team at Made by Things as well. But just in case they aren't, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the motion design industry?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you the shorter version of that story because it could probably go on for all day if I really tried. But let's see here. I went to Art Institute of Pittsburgh for media arts and animation. This was back in 2005 to 2008. And at that point, while also trying to learn as much as I could about making stuff, animation, film, design, I also loved starting businesses. I don't know. It's a weird thing that just kind of stuck with me, but I, always had the dreams of moving out to Los Angeles one day and working for Pixar. I think that was pretty much everyone's dream around that time. Maybe still is, I'm not sure. But so shortly after that, I ended up getting first job at the U.S. Department of Energy and worked on a whole array of different projects there. Just creating visuals for a lot of like crazy science, basically, and ended up working my way out to Los Angeles one day, worked out there doing a lot of music videos, commercials, some independent films, and got to a point one day where I was like, all right, I'd like to leave now. And I'm from Ohio, so I decided to move a little bit closer to family whenever mine and my wife's first was born. It was a scary time. leaving a good job working on cool projects, but it's time for me to kind of start my own thing at that point. Up until that point, I was always doing freelance nights and weekends. And whenever I got to Columbus, that was kind of the start of it all, Columbus, Ohio. And slowly worked up to, hiring freelancers, or first hiring interns, then hiring freelancers, then hiring full-time people. So kind of fast forward to where we are today, Made by Things has now been in business for almost 9 years. And we have a team of 10 full-time and probably another 15 to 20 contractors at the moment on a bunch of different projects. Wow. Yeah, that's part of the fires that we're trying to put out, right? So primarily we're doing animation projects, right? Occasionally some illustration stuff, but we've also been throwing in some live action video here and there, but I'd still say that our bread and butter is motion design and animation.
Sure. And you touched upon this a little bit at the beginning. I've I've seen some of the sort of entrepreneurial business side of stuff that you post on LinkedIn and everything. You said that, you know, you've started quite a few businesses in the past. What were some of, if you don't mind sharing, what were some of those other businesses before Made by Things?
Yeah. So I guess before, I mean, when I was a kid, it was always like shoveling driveways, leaf collection, like just doing whatever I could, selling Magic the Gathering cards in ninth grade, eighth grade, maybe somewhere around there. That was a whole thing. It was always like little stuff like that, always trying to find a way to do something like that. And, you know, whenever I started getting into the industry, that's whenever that side of me started to like kind of come out a little bit more again. Cause it's like, you know what, there's something really special about having a business and somebody trading their money for something that you create. There's just something really, really beautiful about that transaction. And, so at first it was, you know, working full time and then working freelance again, nights and weekends. So to me, that was like kind of the first side business kind of thing. But then once I went full time, I was like, well, now I have all this time. What am I going to do? Cause that's logical apparently. So in that time I created a conference. Initially it was just like this monthly, like, or quarterly sort of like 15 people sort of showing up in the Columbus area. It was a way for me to just to get to know people. I'd sell tickets. It wasn't like a, obviously a huge business. It was mostly about being able to put together a really cool evening for some friends, basically.
Very cool. And I don't think I ever knew that.
There's a lot of different things that I don't talk about. I'm always afraid that it like makes me sound really distracted. So I generally don't talk about all the things, but you asked, so here we go.
No, absolutely.
But anyway, that ended up growing into, over the course of like 2 or 3 years, we ended up doing like an annual conference, had about 200, 250 people show up. Started really gaining some traction until COVID started, and then that stopped. But I'm hoping to bring it back again very soon. That's a little hint, but so there's that. I started a creativity card game called The Game of Creativity. That was just a little idea that ran a Kickstarter for it and ended up doing pretty well, turned itself into a business. Actually ended up selling that a few years back during COVID because I was like, all right, now it's just a shipping business. I don't want that anymore. I run a business with my dad called Ohio Workshop, where we develop 3D printed goods, we'll say. it'll go on and on. Like it doesn't really end with me. And it's just, those are my hobbies, right? Like I love like putting ideas together, putting products together and trying it out.
I was just going to say, and there's that common theme through all of them, you know, there's this element of creation and then the sort of creative entrepreneurial aspect of like, you know, trying things out and tinkering and everything. Right. But yeah, that's really cool. I don't think I ever knew that about you. I always just kind of knew you as the Made by Things guy, but you are making all the things. So that's really cool.
Well, now that I have a team on to kind of help with things, that kind of opened up a lot of doors for me to be able to be creative in kind of new ways. So.
For sure. For sure. Well, speaking of the whole creation aspect, you know, it's a podcast all about style frame creation and what have you. So, you know, I'd love to chat about the frame that you're sharing with us today. Could you tell us a little bit about it and the project that it's a part of?
Yeah. So I guess starting with the end first, this project was for Root Insurance. They are an insurance company based here in Columbus, Ohio. At the time of making this, I think this was 2017, maybe 2018. At the time of making this, they were a small company. And a few years after this, now I'm not saying that it was because of me they did this, but I will say that they became a billion-dollar company shortly after. So coincidence? I don't know. Maybe. So as a project for Root Insurance, and the reason that I picked this is for a lot of different reasons. One is because this project was never supposed to be what it ended up being. It was relatively low budget because it was supposed to be like kind of a simple 2D animation kind of thing. And at this time, especially, you know, I'm wanting to grow the company. I'm wanting to do better than what we have what I had on the portfolio, because at this time it was just myself. And I thought of the idea of like, all right, let's go crazy with this. Like, let's push this far beyond what's even being asked for and just make this like a statement piece that I could always sort of show off, right? And, you know, the first hurdle was explaining this to the client of like, hey, like, I know this is what you asked for. And like, I'm more than happy to give that to you, but I want to use this opportunity to give you something that's worth probably 5 times more than what the budget actually is. Because I don't know, I guess I sort of had something to prove at this time, I felt like, because, you know, at this time, we weren't doing as much 3D work as I wanted to. And that's a lot of my background. When I went to school at the Art Institute, I went there to learn 3D animation. So I'm like, all right, like, I keep on getting these opportunities for like 2D projects. I'm like, eh, this is great and everything, but like, I want to push this. And the only way to do that is, I don't know, to find a client willing to give you that 2D budget to do some 3D work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're like, all right, cool. We'll trust you. We'll see how this whole thing goes. So knowing that I was going to push it into 3D, I guess the theme of things, in some of the early conversations with them, they were like, all right, you know, like, our insurance is so simple. We don't do all the things of like the other companies. We don't have these big marketing budgets. We don't have the mascots. Like, we don't do all this stuff. Like, we just want to be known for simple car insurance. So, and, you know, they're also trying to talk to a younger audience. And what else was there? I guess the thing that was thrown around a bit was that word simple. And to create just a more interesting story, I put the word stupid before it. So stupid simple. And it was those two words that I sort of put together that I was like, all right, now we need to think about like what this is going to be, what this is going to look like. So it's kind of that moment of panic that you always have especially when you convince a client that like, hey, let's do something more than what you wanted to do initially. And you have the name for this thing. And then you're like, okay, great. Now what? and it was really interesting because at this time I had, I guess, let's see here. I had a 2-year-old, right, at this time. And during the middle of the day, and even still, like, I have a 3-year-old now. So like middle of the day, sometimes you just go in there and you just start playing, whatever. And there was one specific day where I go in there and I sit down at our table with my son, and we have a bunch of blocks that are just kind of scattered around like this little coffee table. And we're building stuff, and we build like this whole like cityscape. And then he starts sort of like playing with one of the blocks like it's a car driving through the city. So it pretty much hit me like immediately at this point of like, nothing in this world is more simple than basic geometry and building blocks. And I don't know, I didn't know if they would go for the idea, honestly, but I was like, this is it. Like, what if we just, you know, stupid simple? It's as simple as building blocks that, you know, not even like Legos, but like just simple, like wooden blocks kind of thing. So I put together the style frame, where it was like, I honestly, again, didn't think that they'd go for it, but I put together that style frame, and, you know, wanted to build the whole car out of wood and like simple pieces and like little construction. Like, how would you actually build a car made out of wood? And thinking of it like it was, you know, again, building a city around it and having I don't know, something for it to sort of travel through kind of thing. So at that point, I'm pretty sure there was only one style frame that I ever made on this one. I looked through this. There was only one. And that's all I can find anyway. But I remember pitching it to the people at Root, and they were like, this is crazy. Like, yeah, let's do this. I'm like, all right. So I, you know, I was really excited there, and, you know, feel free to stop me at any time here, but I'll go into, some of the other videos that I'm also sharing here.
Sure.
Which was, okay, like, all right, now that we got this figured out, how is this whole thing going to animate? So One of my favorite tests to share is the very first test of doing animation with this, where I'm trying to figure out, okay, how do we make the wheels turn, but with a physics simulation? Like, I didn't want to like fake the wheels turning. I wanted those to be like actually like real. And the idea was that we set it up so simple that it's just a path, and then the car follows along the path and it just does its wheels by itself, however it needs to. And in the first test that I did, I made a little hill and a little block car with some wheels. And I don't know what I did specifically, but I must have like set the gravity like way too high or something. And the car starts flipping through the entire scene, like going upside down and going, it flips up the mountain around it and then back down. And that was probably my favorite failure of my entire life right there, because I laughed so hard with that. I was like, I got to make sure I save this, because this is way more exciting to watch than anything else. So I also put in the next version, which was just adjusting a couple settings. And you could see how it goes up the hill and down the hill, and the wheels turn perfectly. So, yeah, you know, it's just a really memorable project for me, I think, for a lot of different reasons. I think one is just the family component of this stuff. It was also, it's just a big realization for me that, like, I don't know, where does inspiration come from? Before this point, it was Pinterest, right? Like, looking at what other people are making. So to me, this was an important project for so many reasons. One was, again, just being able to see the inspiration in my own family, in my kids, and being able to apply that. This was a personal project without it actually being a personal project, right? Like, because it had a lot of meaning to me, and it was really, really fun to put this project together, put it out in the world. Another reason that it was big for us is that after releasing this project, we got, a good amount of attention. Like, this was a turning point in the business as a whole, where
that's amazing.
Once people started seeing this, we started getting more and more opportunities to do more 3D work. It did exactly what I hoped it would do. Now, it wasn't like this magical thing, this flip switch kind of thing. It took a little bit of time, but over the course of 2 years after this, like, we started to really gain some traction with things. Like, even still today, I get people referencing what we did with Root, and they're like, we want to do something like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, yeah, it's fun. But like, we also, you know, as part of our process now, it's even like, all right, like, especially if I'm writing it, I'm like, all right, what are the things now that my kids are doing that like that I'm like inspired by? And I don't always like pull things from like real life like that, but it just, when you can find a way to make it a personal project, it's something that you just really doesn't feel like work at all. It's now it's just Absolutely. You telling your own story, you know?
Sure. Yeah. One of the other guests from earlier this year, Tristan, you know, he had similar inspiration in his piece as well, that he was like thinking about his daughters when he was like working on this illustration that he shared with us. And, you know, I think through our conversation, we were both kind of saying like, you know, yeah, like, you know, we're so, you know, especially like digital artists like ourselves, animators and motion designers, we are so quick, you know, maybe I shouldn't make this generalization, but I know for myself, at least, you know, I am so quick to jump to the computer, the digital thing,
right,
to find inspiration, everything. But it really is amazing how if you just sort of literally step out your front door and go smell the roses, you will find that inspiration, like in the most, I don't know, area that you weren't expecting it. Like you were with your kids, you're just sitting there playing and you're just like, stupid simple, this is simple, like building blocks, this is simple. Like, and it starts like sort of churning these ideas. And you can see it. You can see it in the piece and in the frame that you've put together for Root. But you did mention, you know, I'd love to go back a little bit. You did mention though that, you know, initially when you were talking with Root, they had said to you guys, we'd love to do a 2D project. You know, what were there conversations around that 2D approach before you said, hey, actually, let's try 3D instead?
I can't remember the details exactly. Again, a lot of it revolved around budget, where they knew True. That they're like, hey, like we just, their general strategy at this point was, hey, we want to work with like a few different people, and mm-hmm. they wanted to test things with paid ads and see what performed the best. Because mm-hmm. they're at these early stages where it's very scientific of testing the creative, testing the messaging, and see what performs the best. I will say at this point, they still use this as an ad and it still performs well for them.
That's amazing.
So like at this point they've promoted this more than, I don't know, 6-7 million views or something like that. Like, this all paid advertising, not organic, but mm-hmm. still it's good to know that something like that had that big of an impact. So sure. I don't think that they expected that in those early conversations. So for them, they were just like, hey, just, we want you to try out some creative, try out some messaging. Now, I know like a lot of people, a lot of motion designers, especially, they don't work that way at all. Like it usually is like, hey, here's the idea. It's already formed. Like, can you do this thing right here? Make this thing happen. But for us, for me specifically, like this was that opportunity again, where it's like, oh, you want me to just do whatever I want? Like, I mean, it's always an exciting idea, but you have to contextualize it within a brand, and you have to also figure out what it is that you want to say yourself, right? And that was just kind of this big sort of awakening moment for me. So yes, they wanted to do something 2D, mostly based on budget. I think that they were honestly just expecting mostly like text animation type stuff.
Oh, interesting. And wow.
I don't know, there's every so often you run into these opportunities where you're like, I don't always like say that this is the best idea, but there are times where it's like, is this a project worth going super far above and beyond on? Because sometimes you need to, maybe it sounds bad, but sometimes you need to prove something. And at this point, I absolutely felt like I needed to prove something. I felt like I'm not getting the opportunities that I want. Like, why? And whenever I was looking at my portfolio, I was like, okay, I get it. Like, I can't just say I can do these things. I have to show that like I can do these things. And I don't know, it's just a big point for me there.
Yeah. Well, and it's this beautiful moment, it sounds like, too, where like they're in this sort of like early testing, trying things out phase. And, you know, Made by Things had been around for a few years at this point. But like you said, you know, you guys, literally what you just said, you were like, we gotta prove something. We gotta try something else too, so that like, you know, we pick up even more momentum. So the fact that the two of you were kind of like in similar areas to kind of say like, hey,
right,
this relationship will work to kind of allow us to sort of do a bit more exploration is awesome. You know, I think as motion designers, anytime that we can get that opportunity to really just kind of explore and push the creative, it makes us so happy, right?
Right.
And so then obviously when the client's happy with it and it's meeting their business goals, it's like, you know, what more right. could you ask for? Which is one thing I was curious about too. You know, they had said, you know, like, we'd love to approach 2D, probably be, you know, budgets kind of pushing that sort of aesthetic and direction. But what were like some of their business goals that they expressed to you guys for this piece that you put together for them?
Yeah, that's a good question. Again, it's a few years ago here, so I don't remember all the details. But
as best as you can, yeah.
it very much revolved around, hey, we're going to put a campaign together, a paid advertising campaign on YouTube specifically.
Okay.
So they're like, all right, so they're going to run pre-roll ads. And they were also thinking about running some stuff on Hulu, I'm pretty sure at the time. I think they ended up doing that at some point, but it was mostly about YouTube. So for them, again, I'm pretty sure that there was probably 4 or 5 different artists that they reached out to and had each one just do something, basically. It was like, hey, here's our brand, where we're at right now, like, make something. Like make something that you think fits. There was no real wrong answer to anything. It was, we need to set a benchmark for our paid advertising and figure out what works and what doesn't work. So it's really weird because there was no specific like measurable. It was, we are just trying to get a benchmark of where things currently are. So, you know, whenever they run these things, they're going to be looking at, okay, how often are people sticking around for the whole thing? We also did things like we put together a 7, a 15, and a 30 second version of the video, so that they could test which one's going to perform the best. Because you don't know, you can't just say, oh, based on my experience, it's this, because it's always different. They also wanted to test out messaging. So we did two separate voiceover tracks, like two separate scripts. But then we also ended up doing a second video altogether to test those against each other in the same style. So like you see a lot of stuff right now about like Mr. Beast testing his thumbnails. Have you seen anything about this?
I've heard about it, but I don't know if I've actually seen the actual testing of it yet.
So it's really interesting because in one, his mouth is closed, and then the other, mouth is open.
Yes. I have seen this.
And the one that had the mouth closed performed better.
Oh, that's right.
It's crazy that something like that can make a difference, but that's kind of the way it is for, especially some of these brands that are starting out that need to get this benchmark of how are things performing?
Sure.
Because you can't just start from nothing and be like, all right, this needs to change the business.
Right.
Like it's a process going through this stuff. So for us, like that was the real goal was, all right, let's give you guys enough, material to use, enough assets to use to where you can test this against everything else.
Sure.
And basically what they ended up doing, I mean, it's very much a competition. Like it's in the, in the weirdest sense, it was a competition where it's like, all right, whoever performs the best,
right.
And luckily again, like the one that we did ended up performing the best. And now, while I wish it led to, a crazy lucrative relationship at that point, it ended up being the realization that they had of, hey, we need to build our own internal team. So there's this guy, it's a bittersweet kind of thing here where you're oh, that's great. Like I helped, be involved in helping you build this team. But at the same time, like we should keep working with us.
But it speaks to all the talent that you kind of put behind this, like, mini campaign, really. I know it's a lot of like a material for them to like test, like, I guess, brand awareness and what's resonating with their audience and stuff. But, I think, I was reading the case study for this on the company's website too. And you guys, didn't just do the 3D part. Obviously you did everything leading up to like even getting into pre-production. So you're doing the scripting and, the strategy work. So it speaks volumes of like the fact that you guys really nailed it, obviously, by saying, hey, we're going to do these pieces for you that you can then test against one another. This is how we think they're, going to be utilized and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just, again, a reminder that like how so important those early conversations and that early strategy work really is when you then finally get into the production phase of stuff. Like, the fact that it started out as like, okay, we want to approach it as 2D. And you guys were just like, yeah, we could do that. But what if we try 3D? Now you've committed to a 3D pipeline. And you know that you're doing these sort of like different lengths of the videos. Like, how did that, impact the production of this whole thing? I mean, like, were you doing cut downs of the larger 3D piece? Were you doing different 3D videos? Like, what did that look like?
Yeah. So again, I think the initial plan was, I think they asked for a 30 second video, but whenever I wrote the script for this, now I'm not traditionally a writer. I still don't consider myself a writer, but I do find myself writing on a lot of things, even still to this day that we do. But for me, I was like, I wanted to find a way to modulize like everything, right? It was like, all right, let's write a 30 second script, but let's find easy cut down points for that. So again, for like that 6 or 7 second version, it was like, all right, what's the minimum that we want to say there? Which that's not a lot of time to say anything, as we all basically know. And then that 15 second, like, all right, what's the important things to say here? And then for the 30, what's the last little bit of what we'd want to say there? So that's, we basically designed the cutdowns before going into production at all of like, and that's not like a common process, but like for this case, it just seemed to make a lot of sense. And I think a lot of it was, especially talking to the client, of like, hey, here's how we want to do this specifically. Like, this was a brand new process for them too. So, I mean, it's new for me. And I was even honest at that point, like, hey, we've never done anything like this before. But there's definitely times where, you know, whenever we're working with clients early on during that pre-production phase of like, all right, we need to think about those cutdowns. Like, we need to know what they are. Like, are these new voiceover altogether, or is this going to be literally like cutting a longer version down to be something else?
That's so cool. So it really, it sounds like it really did sort of not dictate, I don't think that that's the right word for it, but it really did influence sort of like your later creative decisions by really addressing the different length videos that were going to be a part of this, you know, sort of mini campaign that you created for them. So it's really cool to see that, like, even just from the script, that you were like really building out the rest of the pre-production and production from that. Yeah. And I've seen, you know, you have it on the company website, you know, I encourage everybody to go check it out, as well, but, you have that script there, and it's just so cool to see like that, you know, yeah, you know, there's a call to action in every version of those, like, mm-hmm. very like uniquely too. And it's just, it's awesome. It's so cool.
Yeah. Even like whenever I was laying out animation for that, it was, I don't think I've ever shared any of the cut down versions, but like in the 15, so I guess to tell everyone that can't see this, basically the camera follows a car as it's going through like a forest kind of thing made of shapes. And then it goes up a hill, and at the top of the hill, it says Root Insurance. So that was the 30-second version. Now with the 15-second version, I wanted to have a good place for the camera to stop and then the car to just sort of keep going. So it was like essentially the same animation, but I just needed mm-hmm. to render just a little bit extra of, nope, now that the camera stops and then it goes and then Root Insurance. And then for the 6 seconds, it was, you know, the camera starts off not moving at all at the beginning, and it focuses on like a 53% like reduction in insurance rates or something. In that one, it doesn't follow the car at all. The car just goes in the background. So it was like, I don't know. Like I said, just trying to really modulize the whole thing to make it as easy as possible. And yeah. I think a lot of that had to do with the budget, because it's like, all right, like we're going so far above and beyond right now. Like, we need to figure out how to make this as easy as possible for us.
Absolutely. And on your end too, it's a great example of, you know, working smarter and not harder. I mean, like the way that you described how you even approached the cut down from a 3D pipeline. I mean, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, that totally makes sense. And here, as you're saying, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, well, I would have done this and added all these extra complicated steps. And it's just like, no, just take the camera and like stop it here and then next right. and then next. So yeah, like even from that perspective, like, you know, again, everything translating over from the script to even just how you're sort of moving the camera around the scene. It's just, you know, it's why I love having these conversations with you guys, because you can see it now as we're talking about it, you can see how it funneled into the next step and then so on and so on. You said though that, you know, yeah, so you were a little constricted with budget and everything for this project, but you figured out these, you know, ways to sort of modularize the project.
We're making up words, probably.
Yeah, yeah. if you remember, I don't know if you do, but how much time were you and your team given to complete all of these videos?
Yeah, so let's go to the word team for a second. Because I'm pretty sure this was the last project that I did like most of. Now, I think that I had one person helping with storyboard on this, okay. but I think she was an intern at the time, and I just kind of needed something for her to do. but I know she did the storyboard on the second one, but I'm not sure about the first. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we had about, I want to say 3 to 4 weeks total.
Okay.
It may have been a little bit longer with some of the production or pre-production stuff, maybe like a week or two there, but we were moving pretty quick.
Yeah.
And I mean, once I got to, it looks really complex, but I feel like, I still feel like looking at today, I'm like, there's a lot of like, I mean, it's stupid simple, right? It's like everything needs to be sort of built real easy, right? So like in the background, there's like little houses, little trees. There's only like 5 or 6 different objects there. And we just scatter them around on a plane, and it looks pretty like don't know, lush with detail, basically. So, you know, you have that, and then you have the car. I think a big part of it, honestly, is with the car is it looks detailed because the texture, the wooden texture that's kind of in there. I guess that was a big thing overall. It's just like, all right, for the most part, this is a pretty monochromatic piece. We didn't spend a whole lot of like effort with texture anywhere except for the car. But then again, it was figuring out just, okay, here's the path that it goes on. Great. Now the camera follows. So, you know, I'm not trying to minimize the amount of work that was done there, but at the same time, I was like, all right, we got to figure out how to do this and render it in about 3 weeks.
Right. No, absolutely. It's the perfect, you know, every budget and idea that comes with it has the perfect solution to it. And it is, you know, like that was going to be my next question for you too, was sort of the colors that you chose for this. And again, you know, it sounds like it's coming back to this theme, overall theme of like keeping it simple, you know, Roots brand colors, you know, include that orange, you know, like, was there anything that sort of influenced the sort of muted palette in the background other than keeping it simple?
No, that was all. That was all just a budget constraint. I mean, we obviously could have like put some color back there and do whatever, but it was like, you know, the main focus needs to be on the car here. And it's sort of this idea of like, you know, Root is unique in this industry and they stand out because just how they do things in a more personal way. You probably heard the story before with all the brands, right? Mm-hmm. it's not that unique of a story, but at the same point, they wanted to stand out. They wanted to be different. So I think that was also part of it going into this was like, you know, they are the unique one that stands out in the sea of bland and boring. And I don't know, people that aren't amazing, basically. Ran out of words there.
And I think you're right. When you traditionally think of like insurance companies, car insurance companies in particular, like you said at the top of the show, yeah, they've got these mascots, they've got these jingles, they've got, you know, all the bells and whistles. And when you think of those types of commercials or advertisements too, you know, you're either thinking like probably live action or like very photorealistic 3D, like this is very different. I think that, you know, obviously allows them to stand out too. Like, you know, like, well, hey, who are these guys? Like, I never heard of them before. So it definitely captures that attention, like, you know, which is, you know, probably part of the strategy overall too, right? You're sort of like, we got to, you know, create some like awareness around this brand new car insurance company.
Right. You know, I guess another interesting thing to talk about here is that one of the other five like artist studios that they went to, they went to another studio that probably, I think their costs were about 10 times more than ours, the budget that we got to do a live action piece.
Oh, and interesting.
It was well done. It wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but for whatever reason, whenever they started testing these things against each other, they see that, hey, this really expensive piece isn't performing as well as this stupid, simple piece right here. So, I mean, to me, again, I always have this sort of chip on my shoulder where like, that's what I want to win, right? Like I'm competitive. So like I was hoping that would happen. And that's what did happen. So this piece that they put a lot of production value into, it looked great, but it just didn't work for them. It didn't do anything for them. Whereas this other piece that, I mean, it should have, if we're being honest, it should have cost them about the same between the two, but in the one that we did, like it just worked way better. Now I can't confidently say it's because our process was better, right? I think there's a lot of luck involved, honestly. I do think that what we were doing was far more interesting and unique because it's just something that I've never seen before.
So true.
So like, you know, I believed in the concept from the beginning and it did work out, but still to this day, I'm like, I can't just go into meetings and be like, well, you know, we were responsible for doing this stuff. I'm like, no, we were responsible for trying something crazy and it worked.
Yeah.
So that's the only promise that I make to people still at this point is like, we'll get weird. We'll get crazy. Hopefully it works out well.
Well, and I feel like, and I know this was a few years ago now too, but like in this day and age, you know, where it's just such content overload. And like you were saying, you know, the attention spans are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. The ability to communicate a story so quickly that like captures somebody's attention is a really challenging thing to do. So you know, whether it's chance or timing or whatever, like
right.
the fact that you had the opportunity to kind of just say, let's try this. And it worked, you know, I think that those are great opportunities for creatives too, to kind of just like, again, flex the muscles and just go after it.
Right. You know, I think there's obviously this sort of echo chamber, especially in the motion design industry, just like design industry, illustration, whatever. They all have these sort of echo chambers where when something cool is done, everyone starts sort of doing something similar to that. And I think it's great, right? Like, it's great to take inspiration from new things, but that's what causes trends. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not going to say trends are always bad, but mm-hmm. at the same point, if you're trying to really make somebody stop and watch an ad on YouTube, like, okay, is it going to work to make it look like something that everyone else is sort of also trying to do? Or is it going to work better to just get weird with some stuff here and take a risk, I suppose. And, you know, a lot of people are really uncomfortable by that idea of taking a risk, but I think it kind of goes back to why this was such an important piece for me, because I took a risk and it worked. And, you know, even projects that we still do today, like there's a piece of this project in the planning, in the strategy, like in all aspects of new projects now, like there's a piece of this still there.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, no, when it's able to create that sort of like personal attachment too, right. Of course, it's going to be a project that always stays top of mind and one that you kind of refer back to say like, you know, well, what worked here? What didn't work here? What can we learn from this to, you know, add into or, you know, build other projects from? I feel like, you know, Matthew and Sina kind of talked about that a bit with the Coldplay interactive piece that they did it blind. Yeah. So I feel like I would, you know, I have to admit, I've never picked my own personal favorite frame, but I'll bet it is one that was, you know, either like had like a personal story attachment to it for myself or something like this, where it's like, you know, I finally took a chance on something and it paid off, you know, like there was a reward at the end of it. Right. And it was sort of like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that thing.
Right. It's kind of strange now because, you know, I look at our portfolio now, and it's a diary, right? These are journal entries that nobody else knows about. Like,
so true.
I don't know. I don't want to put like that much importance on each thing, because sometimes it's a little thing, sometimes it's a big thing. But mm-hmm. on every piece that we made, I can tell you the month and the year that we made it and what was going on in my life at that time. And somehow or another, I found a way to incorporate something. Mm-hmm. In there, whether it's a little piece of script, if it's a little, I don't want to say Easter egg, because usually they kind of play a role in things, like a little bit more. You know, we did a project for a company called Provide, and I know that's not the frame that we're talking about here, but that was another one where it's like, you know, stuff's going on in my life. Like, I want to talk about that. I want to find the relationship between their audience and me, and I want to talk about that. So, yeah. You know, it started with this root piece right here, where it's like, all right, the stories that we tell, I need to, whoever's writing it, again, if it's me or we have Shelby, she's our kind of writer producer at this point. And like whoever's writing it, like it, we have to find a way to make this personal in some way. Cause that's our style that, I don't know if we had one, that's what I want it to be, is that we deeply care about these things because it's a part of us.
Well, and, you know, that's something that Ryan Summers talks about too, that like, he's like, we make all these beautiful designs and these beautiful animations, but without any sort of intention behind it, they all they really are is just like beautiful to look at, you know, and right, what you're saying right. is absolutely true. You gotta be able to feel it. Like there's gotta be that personal connection. So yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with that. And I think those are the pieces that we remember. Those are the memorable ones for sure.
Right. You know, there's a part of me that feels like this piece did so well because there was a personal attachment to it.
Right.
Like, it's probably not true, but I like to rationalize it by saying like, okay, people could tell that somebody, that whoever made this, like put a piece of themselves into this. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of this intangible thing that I believe exists in the work that we do. I think it's something that's felt, not always heard, I suppose.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and you know, not to get into like AI too much, because I know that that's like a big,
let's go,
a big trending thing now, but just to touch on it very briefly, you know, that's why I personally feel like AI stuff is just always going to just feel like very like AI stuff, because right. there isn't this intention behind it or this inspiration or motivation behind it. You know, the stories made by things, other studios, artists, you name it in the industry, there isn't a personal connection or there's a personal right. purpose behind the pieces. And I just don't know if that's ever going to be able to be replicated by a machine.
Right. I mean, without going
that
too
could
far
be debatable.
It, I completely agree that one day brands will probably be able to type in what they want and then they get it. It might be a 6-second little ad of some kind or another. That's totally possible. But for me, I'm not trying to like fight against it or say it's evil or anything like that, but I do this stuff because I genuinely enjoy it. So I know that I'm not going to stop. And I like to believe that other people are going to be able to feel that personal connection when something is made. I mean, I think we've been doing that for hundreds of years now. We see, you know, old Renaissance paintings that these were not like just somebody that was good at painting. They had something to say. And it was because of that, that it became just like this amazing, I don't know. I think that's the biggest difference between the works that we all know and love and just a random hotel painting, basically.
Right.
Where it's like,
right.
Technically they're both amazing, but this one says something. This one doesn't.
Absolutely.
And it's what it says. And I think that's what I keep thinking about when it comes to AI, where it's like, yeah, like the world will go where it's going and I'm accepting of whatever that means for me, but I'm going to keep making stuff. That's all I really know. And that's all I can control.
Yeah, no, for sure. No. And that's a great point. Like, you know, I don't want to get too much off track with the AI stuff, but I think that's an excellent point to make though, for creatives who are, you know, whether they're creating style frames or whatever, you know, to like, just keep focused on the making, because, you know, everybody has a story to tell. You have a story to tell. Like, so, you know, just keep on creating. And I think that that's the perfect antidote to the AI sort of discussion and maybe even some skepticism, fears around it or whatever.
Right.
But you know, we've spoken a lot about like sort of like a personal connection to pieces a lot, which I think is really important, you know, when creating style frames, any of these sort of like motion design, animation, creative pieces. But I had a quick question because I feel like it makes it even more personal. If I'm correct on what I'm thinking here, did you do the voiceover for this as well?
I did not.
Oh, darn. Okay. Never mind.
I have never. Oh my God. So there's been a few times where clients are like, we love your Scratch voiceover. We want to keep it. And every single time I'm like, absolutely not. You can't afford me. No, I'm okay with my own voice, but like, I'm not a voiceover artist and I'm not like good at it. This might've been an instance right here where they did like my voice as a Scratch voiceover and they're like, find somebody similar. So that's what
oh,
I did.
Interesting. Okay. Okay.
But there was one that we did for, a company called Tarani that's on our portfolio as well,
nice.
Where this was kind of like a firsthand story. And I did the Scratch voiceover for it. And they're like, how did you get the voiceover? Cause like, apparently my voice and theirs sounded like pretty similar. And I'm like, they're like, well, we could just have you say this part. Cause we missed this. I'm like, nope, not doing it. Don't want to.
I'll do everything but the voiceover.
Yeah. That's not my talent and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, no, same here. I'll do a Scratch, but that's literally what it is. It is like Scratch. You don't want to hear it on a like national level.
Right. There's places that I've worked at where that's happened quite a bit actually, where somebody does the Scratch voiceover, like I'll see them like doing this thing and then all of a sudden I'm hearing the person that's sitting next to me, hearing their voice every like, you know, every Sunday during football games where I'm like, oh, I gotta hear their voice again, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
it's funny.
It is. It's totally an art form too. I mean, I, you know, I'm amazed that, you know, like Joey from School of Motion that like, you know, he can do like all crazy stuff for voiceover. I'm like, oh my God, he does all of this stuff. He does the voiceover, the animation, the design. I'm just like, that's nuts. Like you can keep it all in house.
Yep. Nice.
Well, I always have to ask guests on the show too, you know, these last three questions, you know, we've spoken about, you know, sort of the personal connection to this piece, you know, for you and, you know, what it meant for Made by Things at the time. But these last three questions, I always feel like, you know, are like, you know, kind of like windows into like, you know, why the piece is a favorite. And, you know, I'm just curious, you know, what would you say were the biggest like challenges and rewards of working on this piece?
Let's see. I mean, I'd have to go back to, as far as challenges go, it was just a limited amount of time and budget to, and I think it's the challenge that we all face on every project. So I feel like that's an easy answer, but, it's also, I feel like every project has its own little challenging thing. And for me, it was, okay, like I wanted to do that physics simulation of it doing that. Like I've never done anything like that before. So it was like, all right, let's attack that first to really figure out what's going on here. So I'd say challenges, there's two. As far as rewards go, I honestly can't, I don't know. I don't know if I can put it all into words, but again, whenever I say like this project changed kind of the path of Made by Things, like that's kind of an understatement, because it presented us in a way of that nobody else was presenting work and nobody else was talking about work, especially at this time like this. And honestly, I still feel like people don't talk about work like this. But I think by talking about it, like I just did right there, because this is a story that I've sort of told clients and stuff like that in the past. Whenever people realize that this is kind of personal, I don't know. It's brought things to us that has sort of allowed us to continue down that path. We stopped being seen as simply a production company, which again, if that's you, that's totally fine. But we became more of a creative partner to people. And to me, that's exactly what I wanted. And again, it's nothing that happened overnight, but I visualize an asteroid hitting a comet or something and just redirecting the trajectory kind of thing. So this is the thing that sort of did it for us, where, again, like I said, even still to this day, we get people coming to us like, hey, what you did for them, like, we want to do that. But like for us, and
sure,
I don't know, it's pretty rewarding. And not to say that I've built an entire company based on this one project, but if I had to put it on one project, it would be this one.
That's amazing. And what would you say, you know, what would you say, you know, is the reason why this is your favorite frame?
Again, I would go back to it being the first time that I really felt like I put myself into something. I think before this point, it was, I can use software pretty well. And then at this point right here, I think we sort of go through these seasons, right? I think any artist goes through these seasons where you're comfortable and you're not comfortable. And I think I kind of got to a point where I'm just a little comfortable and a little bit like, okay, this is it. Let's just go down this path and it's fine. And then when you get opportunities like this, again, you have an opportunity to just nudge the trajectory of where you're going. And I don't know, like I knew even at this time of doing this, I'm like, hey, here is an opportunity. And that's exciting. It was just kind of this completely like, I don't know, I felt re-energized just on all the work and all the effort that I've been putting into everything to be able to build a studio, to be able to do great work. Whenever you do something that actually gets a little bit of traction, does well, I don't know, it was just a really special feeling that just, I don't know, made me really excited about the industry, I guess, as a whole.
I love that. No, I love that response. I mean, it sounds like, again, it was a very impactful piece, not just for yourself, but for the whole company, mm-hmm. everyone who was involved with it, and even Root. I mean, you know, like the fact that it still performs so highly today, you know, just speaks again to everything you guys poured into it. So right. I can imagine why, you know, this is your favorite and why it's got a lot of special meaning behind it as well. So, you know, yeah, thank you so much for sharing this, you know, with us today. This has been such a cool project to sort of break down, both in terms of the creative and the business aspects behind it. And it's been really cool getting a glimpse into yours and the Made by Things team's creative process. If people want to, you know, connect with you guys to learn more about what you and the team are working on, what's the best way for them to do so?
You can go to madebythings.com.
Very cool. We'll make sure to include Made by Things, the case study for this amazing project, and links to some of the tools and resources we've mentioned here for our audience to check out. But that wraps it up for today, everyone. Feel free to email us at styleframesatpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions. If you like what you see and hear here, don't forget to subscribe, like, share, and review the show on your favorite podcasting platforms as well. And lastly, come connect with us on social. We're on Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you again, Matt, for joining us today, and we'll see you all in the next one.